If we are recording, it doesn't sound ridiculous. And we are recording, so thankfully we kept up some modicum of acting like we know what we're doing. So,
no, yeah. I don't think we do a very good job at that.
No, perhaps not. But, yeah, so the big news in our lives is that we are actual real friends now and not just internet friends because we've met in person.
That's true. Yes. In fact, not only have we met in person, Dave and his lovely wife Ann came here to South Carolina and hung out with me and for most of the day, and my wife for a big chunk of the day too. And I forced them to walk around the entire perimeter of downtown Charleston, South Carolina, after lying to them and telling them it was a short walk.
Yes.
It is a short walk for me.
I felt like a Civil War soldier. You know, just getting ready for the dysentery to kick in any moment.
Well, it would have been fitting because most of my attempts at being a tour guide were pretty shitty. So dysentery would have been
fitting. Was awesome. I was like, I kept saying, I wish my father-in-law was here. He'd love this stuff.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, that was great. I neglected to take you by a county hall, Dave. I forgot about that after the fact. The longtime wrestling venue in Charleston. So
yes,
if you ever make your way here again, we'll definitely prioritize county hall, which is now, for the record, an apartment complex, catacorner to my wife's favorite watering hole.
So, very, very interesting. Since Maple Leaf Gardens is now a grocery store.
So. What was weird about that is Maple Leaf Gardens was like a 20,000 seat arena. County Hall was like maybe if you had overflow crowd like 4,500, and actually probably not even that. Probably more like 3,750 or so for overflow.
So that's where you'd picture the grocery store. You picture the 50,000 seat. Yeah. Well, to be fair, Maple Leaf Gardens is a grocery store. As well as several like athletic little centers too. So.
Yes, yeah,
and some buildings for some offices for Ryerson University, I believe. So
yeah,
very hip area down there.
Oh yes, too hip for me. Of course, I've never been to Toronto and know nothing of it. But
you would look like you were exactly where you should be if you were down there. When we went through the market in Charleston and we saw a section with paintings for Cats of Charleston, I was like, I just wish I had a painting of Dylan with his hipster beard sitting there.
In true hipster fashion, I will note that my hipster beard, that I've had a hipster beard longer than beards were cool, which is of course what all hipsters say. But in my case, I started growing beards on and off when I was about 13. So, back then I just looked like a shady kid who would sell you cigarettes, which is pretty funny because I was a shady kid who would sell you cigarettes.
Yeah. And I'm so not hip because, the first night we were in Charleston, the night before we came out to see you when we just got into the hotel, I managed to snap the frame of my glasses in half when I was cleaning them. So ever since, they've been held together by a Band-Aid. So
you've got the Devon Dudley look right now.
I do. Yeah. I'm all Jamesoned up.
You know, that's, you know, what's God, what's funny about that is I actually almost thought about trying to pull my brother Devin onto tonight's show. When we've mentioned the idea of doing the show we're going to do tonight before. And, you know, and if Devin was on the line, that would have been the perfect opportunity to say, Devin, get the whatever.
Yeah.
And it would have been a terribly shitty joke that wouldn't have been funny, just like it wasn't right now. But it would have been a good opportunity. But he's not on the line. So
he's not on the line.
So screw him.
No.
Who cares about that little brat?
Speaking of little brats, it was like Jameson's son, who was the kid in the John Cena, Bray Wyatt cage match this year.
So that's was a, that, no,
wasn't it?
Was that really his son?
Apparently.
Wait a minute, hold on. Jameson had consensual sex with someone.
Well, we don't know that, but we know he reproduced.
Fair enough. We don't know if it was consensual. We just know he had a child. Okay.
Yeah, that was the cage match, right? They had.
Yes, it was that awful thing.
And see, all I saw of it was that angle at the end. So I was like, that is kind of cool. So I'm Googling John Cena, Bray Wyatt, cage match, creepy kid.
Jameson's kid.
I prefer creepy kid. Creepy kid at Extreme Rules 2014. Wrestling News World. Bray Wyatt beats John Cena thanks to possessed child. It doesn't say. Okay, keep the conversation going.
Yeah, this is the epitome of good radio, people. We're several minutes in. We have not even introduced the theme of tonight's show.
Yeah, just in case you're wondering, we're finally doing our John Cena show.
Yes, we are. With no real research, I might add. Like, I literally contacted Dave a couple hours ago, if that, on Facebook. I was like, hey, you want to do a show tonight? How about the Cena show? But I do kind of feel like Cena's topical because, first of all, he's still one of, if not the biggest star in wrestling. And secondly, with the Greatest Wrestler Ever project that's going on over at Pro Wrestling Only, there has been a fair amount of talk about John Cena and just how good he actually is and sort of, I think, some pretty divergent opinions so far on John Cena. Some people who are new to John Cena, who I think are, I don't want to say super critical, but more critical than I would certainly be. And then other people who are probably more praiseworthy than I would be. So he's an interesting guy to talk about.
Yeah. And I do want to give a shout out on the Greatest of All Time project to our friend Steven, who's very heavily involved in it. And tonight I decided to come home and use my Friday. I played some Batman Arkham Asylum on PS3 and listened to the Dr. Keith show with Alan Dean and Steven talking with the project, and it was a very good show. So wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't like to give Steven Graham credit for anything.
He has an awesome dog. I'll give him credit for that.
That's another one of your real life friends, Dave.
Yes.
Dave has many real life friends, including Wolfman, Stephen Graham.
Who was the first one you said?
Wolfman.
Wolfman. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then all my retro friends.
So Dave, I'm gonna. We've done these shows. We've done these sort of. I don't know what you even want to call them. They're not really bios. They're not. I don't even know if career retrospective is the right term. Maybe that's the
career rundown. I always say.
But we've done these for a lot of people at this point. We've done one for Luger. We've done it for Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Terry Funk. I mean, there's
Whipper Watson Jr.
God, there's a litany of guys that we've done this for. Okay.
Yeah.
And Cena feels like a guy who certainly fits into the mold of those guys. But what's interesting to me about Cena, right out of the gate, before we sort of go back to his origin story, so to speak, which we tend to do on these shows.
Are those actual sirens in the background at your place, or are you playing a John Cena hip-hop album with sampling?
No, those are actual sirens. As you now know from being in Charleston, Dave, and from visiting here, this is a high-crime area.
Yes.
But this lovely city that everyone wants to move to, according to Condé Nast Traveler.
I would totally love to move there. I would love to live in that city.
There's no wrestling here. If you're a wrestling fan, don't expect to ever see wrestling shows. No. That's the only negative thing.
Yeah. On Sunday, I'm going to go watch Matt Sydal live. So.
Yeah. Well, on Sunday, I'm probably going to watch some amateur porn and do some schoolwork. So
I will clarify, I'm watching amateur porn with Matt Sydal, so it's not that different.
But this is disorganized, even by our standards.
Yeah. Okay, so John Cena.
But hold on, I want to make this point out of the gate. What really interests me about Cena is that I think, and I've made this point on Hall of Fame shows when we've talked about Cena, but I think this it bears repeating. To me, Cena is. And I think this may be the case. He might be the last major wrestling star of his kind. I mean, there may never be another guy that sort of is a figurehead in the way he's been a figurehead, is sort of synonymous with wrestling in the popular culture the way he has been for the last, you know, eight years or so. I feel like that sort of traditional Bruno Hogan-esque style ace role that he sort of plays, I think there's a possibility that John Cena could be, because of the changing business structure of the WWE, because of the changing television landscape overall, because of the lack of competition, for a variety of reasons, I think there's a strong possibility that John Cena is literally the last guy of this light, of this sort that we will see.
I think it'll just be an evolved form of it, because you could argue he's the first of his kind that we've seen as well, right?
Could you?
He's got aspects where he's like a Bruno or a Hogan or a Rock or Austin, but he's also got different aspects where, you know, he carries pay-per-views differently, merchandise is different for him. He's certainly far cry business-wise from, you know, the way that things were promoted with Bruno, closer to with how they were with Rock and Austin, but, you know, he's definitely been a different kind of entity than that any of those guys were, and whoever is the guy after him will be as well.
You know what? I think in a way you're right, but I think the big difference between Cena and those other guys is, to me, the big difference is the fan base has changed, not so much the guy himself. Mm-hmm. You know, the fan base is much different than it used to be, and it used to be that you could spoon feed people stuff and pretty much get the reaction you wanted if you tailored it in the right way. And if you didn't get the reaction you wanted, you could completely change it in post-production because the shows were taped so far in advance, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that anymore. And so what they've done is they've sort of run with Cena as this babyface who's also the biggest heel. I mean, he's the biggest babyface on the roster and the biggest heel on the roster simultaneously. And
it's kind of something of his era as well. I mean, 2006 was when, you know, that was huge for him, you know, 2006 or 2007. And the same thing was happening with Mystico. And sure. It was happening to Tanahashi to an extent as well, you know.
Let's not get out of hand.
Oh, no. I'm not saying he was as big as them. I'm just saying the way people reacted to him was as a babyface and a heel.
That may be true.
Yeah, like the women and children loved him, and, you know, the guys booed him. You know, like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is definitely, this could be indicative of some sort of shift in fandom.
Yeah, and Oscar De La Hoya, same thing. So
I think promoters are just, I think there's going to be a change in the game. If we haven't seen it already, there's going to be a change in the game. And
I will clarify, I do have probably some higher opinions of recent years of Tanahashi than you do, but I'm under no illusion that he was as big in 2006 as either Cena or Mystico, or that he's as big now as they were then. So.
Yeah. Oh no, I know that. But, you know, yeah. Cena this year, like our Cena in general. What's different though, and I know we're putting the cart before the horse here because we usually start from the beginning and work our way forward, but why not? I would just go with the flow.
Let's go right to the intestines.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Go for the guts. I think what's a little bit different about Cena is we always hear about how they promote guys, or they promote the brand, not the guy. Well, John Cena is a guy they promote, and you can see that because he still sells more merchandise than everybody. The house shows he's on still do better than the house shows he's not on. You know, when he does disappear for a while, it seems like ratings hurt. To me, Cena is still the guy. And
he's the guy. If he's gone, you got to replace him.
You got to
compensate.
I that's the thing. I don't think they're ever going to do that. I think they really look at it and say, we're never going to have another John Cena. I think their mentality is, we're going to have, you know, we might have these sort of part-time guys like Taker was for a while, like Brock is now, which I think has been a disaster, I might add.
Yeah, I'm not happy with that right now.
Like, but you know, I think they sort of see those guys maybe as, you know, sort of their big match, to use an old UFC term, their super fight guys. You know, I think they sort of see those guys in that respect, but I don't think they're ever going to replace John Cena. I don't think they will ever even attempt to. I think they really do believe that in pushing the brand, and I think the network is going to push them even more in that direction. And that's kind of what I meant, even though I sort of agree with your point about him being different in some ways. That's kind of my point. I think he's unique in the sense that I think he's the last guy that the WWE is going to push this way. I don't think they're ever going to do it again. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, because I think it's bad for the business not to try to create a star at that level. But I just kind of don't think it's going to happen. You know, and I think Cena has an interesting legacy as a wrestler, and you know, both as a guy from a business perspective, if you're looking at it from, you know, buy rates, merchandise.
Yeah, how on the greatest wrestler of all time scale and the biggest wrestler of all time scale.
Yeah, I mean, like, exactly. And for both as a worker and as a draw, he's a very fascinating guy to look at in both respects, I think. And he's worth studying. So do you want to start from square one here and work our way forward with this guy or what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we're looking at a guy who started his career in 1999. He was a bodybuilder down in California, got hooked up with UPW. So he was in with Rick Bassman, who, you know, was the guy who, you know, introduced Sting and the Ultimate Warrior to the wrestling business, and two other guys
to steroids.
To steroids, yeah. No. I think they were quite friendly on speaking terms with steroids before Rick Bassman came along. But the other two guys of what was it? Power Team USA.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't even know who those random guys were. I'll look it up here while I'm talking, but I was convinced that the Black Scorpion had to be one of them.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
Well, it seemed to make sense at the time when I was an idiot 15-year-old. I don't know if either of those guys ever even had a match.
I doubt it.
Okay, they were Mark Miller and Garland Donahoe, so they were obviously very important. So,
extremely pertinent to our John Cena podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that's not that guy. Anyway, so he came into that, and I mean that's something that a lot of people were coming out of that scene at the time. UPW. Had I know one guy that was there that I've been looking through results of here that ended up, you know, getting some exposure in a different way years later, is Smelly and his brother Chris Bell, I think it was, that did the movie Bigger, Stronger, Faster.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Anyways, it was his brother who did that movie, and he and his other brother, Mike Bell, were both in UPW. Other guys that were down around there at the time. I don't know if Batista came out of there, too, if he was signed out of that. But Christopher Daniels was kicking around there a lot. So, you know, they were pretty good at, you know, pumping guys full of, you know... of course, actually, the guy who... I was going to bring this up anyways, but the guy who... did a lot of training for John Cena is actually Samoa Joe.
Yeah,
so he came out of that setting as well. So you saw him come out of that setting, and then he got signed up in 2000 by WWE. I know, watching a number of years back, there was a Confidential thing. I really used to like the show Confidential, and they had I think it was on that they had an where Jim Ross was talking, and or it might have been something else a few years later. It actually might have been the John Cena documentary. And he said that he signed John Cena, and he called up Vince and said, I've just signed the guy who's going to be your headlining WrestleMania in about 5 years. And I believe that he said that, and he was obviously quite right as well. So so from there, he went into OVW. And have you seen much of the stuff of him in OVW?
I would say that I have probably seen less OVW than any other promotion of any relevance from anywhere on the planet Earth. I've seen very little OVW, period. I have seen clips of John Cena in OVW, but nothing substantial at all.
Yeah, I've just seen little clips. My understanding is that he was kind of got known as a bit of a talker there. He was involved with Sean O'Hare. Sad recent death there. I've seen some stuff of them involved, and I'm not sure I don't think he ended up. He might have ended up being OVW champion.
He was
from February 20th, 2002 until May 15th, 2002. He won that title from, I've got to go forward here because he definitely didn't win it from Bill Dundee.
That'd be awesome.
It would be awesome if he had. But he won it from the DiMaggio? What the hell's going on here? Oh, he actually won it from Leviathan. So he won it from Batista and then lost it to Nova. So you've got Batista, John Cena, and then Simon Dean. That's quite the lineage there.
That is quite the lineage. And actually, it's worth noting that, like, basically, Orton, Batista, Cena, and Brock sort of all came out at the same time.
They totally did. Yeah.
I mean, they weren't signed on the same day or anything, but they all sort of came out of the same camp, and which is interesting because I don't know. I mean, they've done a pretty good job making note of that in recent storylines, but I don't know how many people actually realized that, at least until recently.
Yeah.
I guess realize isn't the right term. I don't know how many people actually realized the significance of that until recently.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, kind of what was expected at the time was the next big the big four from there were expected to be Brock, Brock, Orton, Rico Constantino, and Ron Waterman. And you had Leviathan and Prototype, and they were Batista didn't really get a chance to shine there because he really wasn't, I don't think he was that great yet, good yet either. So
I saw some USA Pro shows with Batista in the early parts of the decade, and he was pretty good there.
Was he okay?
He wasn't outstanding.
Maybe Cornette did just drop the ball. I mean, I think he was really good, but it's possible you're gonna miss sometimes, right?
Well, I mean, another thing too is this was a weird situation because another thing that's worth mentioning about that group is, whenever people say CM Punk's influence wasn't that big, because of course the WWE would have had to start using guys from name indies and name indie talent, because what else are they gonna do for stars? Well. This is evidence that you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, because none of those four guys were name indie talent.
None.
those were guys who were plugged right into the WWE system. They were signed in large part for reasons that had absolutely nothing to do with any contribution they made on the indie wrestling scene. They were crafted specific to the WWE style. They did not really learn their trade prior to being in the WWE system. This is what the WWE would be consistently churning out. For better or worse, frankly, you could look at it two different ways, considering how successful these guys have been. But this is the type of guy the WWE would have been churning out for forever if it wasn't for guys like CM Punk.
Yeah. So, and the whole question about what's better, bringing in indie guys and moving them up through developmental or starting guys from scratch, the answer is both.
Yes.
I think you need to do both,
I completely agree.
Yeah, and the whole, when they were doing a lot of, the legacy guys like Orton, and then when they would bring in, Joe Hennig, and then
the legendary Manu.
Yes. I think they missed the boat on him a little bit.
I like all Samoans, dude. That.
Yeah. When they were doing just that was a bit of an issue, but I think that's a very valuable thing to do as well.
Yes, I agree. I think there's value in both. I just thought that was worth mentioning out of the way, because I haven't seen the OVW stuff, but one thing, and this is skipping slightly, it really isn't skipping ahead, because this is really the next thing when he comes to the main roster, and he sort of had that plain Jane sort of look. He didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't really give him...
One thing is, too, to note that him and Samoa Joe did a lot of WWE dark matches together, I think. Or not necessarily the matches together, but they were shows together.
Okay, yeah, and that doesn't surprise me. And I supposedly Cena lobbied for Joe to get a job. You know, the rumors always been that it was the Umaga job, and Joe turned it down. I'm skeptical about how true that is. But
I still wonder if he'll end up lobbying for him. You know, if TNA goes out of business, or if he just parts ways from there.
I think he would, but I don't think Joe would get a job. I think Joe's best chance of getting signed by WWE at this point would be to end up in developmental as a trainer. I don't think there's any way they'd put him on TV at this point. I just don't see. And actually, I can't blame them, to be honest.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of recent Joe.
He's been pretty good this year. Yeah. But it is what it is. But with Cena, you know, when he came to the main roster and he had that plain Jane look, I remember they did this thing on TV. And this might have even been his first night there for all I remember. I can't remember. I just remember watching a SmackDown live. And this is when SmackDown and Raw really had their own identities as shows. I mean, they really, truly had their own identities as shows. And, like, at the close of the show, there was this angle.
Everyone say hi to Ann.
Hi to Ann. at the close of the show, they did this angle where... And I'm going to botch this, and somebody's going to listen and go, you don't even remember this angle, and you're claiming it's memorable. Well, fuck you to whoever says that. But I just remember they did this angle, and Rey Mysterio, I think, jumped off a cage onto somebody. And, like, at the very end of the show, it was Rey and John Cena, and I think maybe Edge in the ring. And
it
like
was. I don't think that was his debut show. I think it was within a couple weeks of that.
But the big deal, like, it was like they were already – so that's
the future
why I'm always,
of SmackDown, yeah.
And see, that's the thing. That's why I'm always skeptical of this idea that John Cena was just like this guy that they had no real plans for. And then he rapped in front of Stephanie McMahon and she was like,
yeah,
this guy's a star.
I really liked him during that period. I thought he had a lot of great stuff. They treated him. And that debut angle against Kurt Angle, like that was as well as I've ever seen that done. Where he came in as a fresh face guy and challenged him. And I remember reading Angle. You know, they had an interview with Angle on WWE.com afterwards, and that was when they did a lot of out of character stuff, right? And he was saying profiling Cena, saying he was 25. This was in 2002, I believe. It was actually on the same show that Edge and Hogan maybe won the tag titles.
That sounds right.
From Rico and Rikishi, something like that, or something ridiculous like that. And I remember just Angle saying he's definitely ready. He's probably been ready for a while and stuff like that. And they were really hyping him as a big thing. And I really don't buy into that either.
Yeah, I'm just really suspicious of that. I'm not saying they had plans at that point for him to become what he became. I think if you had talked to Vince McMahon at that point, he would have seen Cena as probably the fourth best prospect of those four guys from OVW. But I absolutely think that they saw this guy as a star right away, and they presented him pretty well right away. And you know that the stuff he had in his first couple years, I mean. People talk about, you know, a lot of people sort of begrudgingly came to accept the idea of Cena being a good worker in a qualified sense by the end of 2006, early 2007. But I thought he was pretty good right away. I mean, I enjoyed a lot of his stuff from 2002, 2003.
Absolutely. You know? And I did like it when he turned heel with the rapper gimmick as well. And I mean, it was a heel gimmick at first. I don't know. Anybody else remember that Bull Buchanan was his like running mate for a bit there, and they called him B squared?
Yeah. Oh, that's outstanding.
And then he was just gone. And then I think they had Red Dog, who ended up being, what was his name?
Rodney Mack.
Rodney Mack, yeah, like he was with Cena for a bit there too, wasn't
the,
he?
The White Boy Challenge, one of my all time favorite angles. So classy.
Please explain further.
Oh, the white boy challenge where Teddy Long would come out and they'd bring out a white boy to wrestle Rodney Mack.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, last a certain yeah.
amount. Oh, yeah, man. There's a really good Rodney Mack versus Spike Dudley white boy challenge on YouTube if anybody wants to watch it. But, yeah, see we keep getting distracted. But
Rodney Mack was with him for a bit. I am remembering that correctly, I think. And then eventually they just kind of kept him on his own, and he started doing – he did some really cool heel rapping promos, and you know, especially going into 2003, he really had some great moments with that. Like I think the one that everyone would remember is the one where he was feuding with Undertaker. I think he faced him at, was it SummerSlam 03?
I don't remember what pay per view it was, other than I remember them having a really good match.
Yeah, and he had the promo where he was outside and he was in the middle of this like pentagram on fire, and he was like, I ain't gonna be sacrificed, I ain't no MIDI, and I'm gonna go Waco on your ass like a Branch Davidian. It's like, whoa, that's pretty badass, you know. So yeah, that was really cool. And he was actually, weirdly enough, like he was a pretty, you know, solid heel, and actually got left off WrestleMania that year, which wouldn't be surprising, like, in this day and age, because everyone gets left off WrestleMania, but in 2003, that wasn't necessarily the case. So, but coming out of that, he was seen as top challenge. He was Brock's top challenger coming out of WrestleMania 19 in 2003, so.
Yes, a quick ascent. Although that was a weird... Brock's title reign was you know, he had some weird challengers over the years.
Yes.
The hardcore Holly feud, for example. And I like Bob Holly way more than most people, but that, come on.
Even more than Matt Capitelli?
I think more than Matt Capitelli. I think more. I could be wrong, but
if everyone's wondering why they're hearing plates clinking, my wife brought me home Tim Hortons. And what's your opinion on John Cena? Pretty hot, eh?
Give me.
Yeah. Yeah, she made some motions over there.
Good lord.
I am recording, by the way.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, he was a real stud back then, especially, too. That was before he had all the wear and tear on him. He was fresh meat. But,
And, yeah, so, I mean, and it was basically in 2003, I think going into SummerSlam, he was still a heel, and he faced Undertaker there. And it was then going into the fall that they started to turn him babyface. And I do remember he had some, like, crossover with Chris Benoit there. They had a little bit of stuff where Chris would have someone in a cross face, and I think it was probably Jonathan Coachman was in a cross face or something like that. I might just be losing my mind. I might really be needing this chocolate chip muffin for the sugar high. But
Jonathan Coachman, yeah. another staple of the Cena era, I might add. But yeah, I the initial heel turn, it's funny because I think originally I think a lot of the backlash to him being a face was because people liked that John Cena a lot. You know what I mean? Like, they really liked that character. It was fresh. It was different. It was exciting. God,
it was really good.
It was. Absolutely. 100%. And you could make the argument that was his best character work of his career. And I don't know that I would dispute that argument, to be perfectly candid. But
yeah, actually, one thing that I remember really good, really well, was I went to SmackDown at the Air Canada Center, and he had a little one night feud with Angle, and that was pretty fun because he was rapping doing his rapping promo at Angle, and Angle goes, "Wow, I can't believe it! They found someone whiter than me," and the place went nuts. So.
I think that. But, you know, I think it's kind of funny how things have shaped up with, like, because I think now when people complain, a lot of the people who bitch, I don't even know if they were watching in 2003, yeah. Because that was
that was out of my mind. They didn't have his match with Undertaker at SummerSlam, but anyways.
Because see, that was a real low point for the WWE. That was the point. That was the kind of the point, you know, where Triple H's reign of terror was in full swing, and Raw was completely unwatchable. It was a completely unwatchable show. You couldn't watch Raw. It was so bad. I mean, you think Raw is bad now? I mean, the Raws this year, as bad as they've been at times, were several thousand times better on average than the Raws of the Evolution era Triple H. And I mean, it's not even close. And Cena and those guys, it wasn't just Cena. I mean, it was all those guys, Ray, these other guys. They had their own sort of fiefdom over on SmackDown, where they were putting out good stuff. But I don't think – it's funny because I think a lot of the people who clamor for the Cena of old, I don't even think they were watching then.
No.
It's just like it's a Pavlovian response to a guy that they see as hokey. And I admit he is pretty hokey. I don't even disagree with that. But I don't even think they have – there's no memory there. They don't – it's not like they – watch John Cena, the rapping character. They didn't watch him.
No.
And I mean, he did some great stuff. Remember that Eddie Guerrero angle in the feud?
Not sure, actually.
Oh, they had a great match, too. You know, they, like, he had some really good matches with some really good guys during that period over on SmackDown, sort of in isolation when he was happily kept away from Triple H. You know, so he that period is, I think, it's an easy to forget period of his career. And I think part of the reason that people, when they discuss him and they give him credit for being really good, usually they don't even start. The earliest they started is 2004. And I think a large part of that is because nobody watched, outside of the really hardcore fans, nobody even watched him at the very beginning. Because, you know, Triple H had murdered interest in the shows.
It was definitely their low peak in popularity. I mean, that was probably the worst business WrestleMania of recent years. So.
Oh, John Cena. Here's the thing. Okay, we can start talking about this now. We can skip to 2004 now.
Yeah.
John Cena saved the WWE from Triple H. Mm-hmm. Like for any you could criticize John Cena for any number of things, and there's a lot of the criticisms people levy against him that I would agree with. I think he's too cornball on promos. I think he does a poor job sort of making wins and losses matter. That's a criticism that Dave Meltzer always has of him, or at least the way he's written. I agree with that. I don't think that's wrong. But in a world where John Cena doesn't come around and everything else stays as it was, I think there's a strong possibility that Triple H is still the number one guy on TV. I really believe that.
Or at least would have been for a lot longer.
I mean, I think there's a very good possibility that we live in a world where the game is here to stay. You know, and that's all you get. If you don't like it, well, I guess wrestling's not for you. You know, John Cena, starting in 2004, really, but especially in the years that followed that, he's the guy that saved us from Triple H. So for that reason alone, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for John Cena. So that's my intro for you to talk about his 2004, Dave.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was in the Rumble that year. Then a big thing was after the Rumble, going up into Mania was actually with all the talk of secondary titles not meaning much now, like, this is actually a really good build of making a secondary title mean something with him and Big Show. His Big Show was U.S. champ, and they built up to WrestleMania 20, and that was actually the opening match was John Cena defeating Big Show for the U.S. title, and I actually remember that as being a pretty fun little match.
I have very little memory of the match. I'm not going to pretend that I have great memories of it, because I don't. But,
and him giving him the
that I was just about to say,
and that's a Mania moment, right?
That's the thing that really stands out from that, you know, and on that big stage in front of the most people, you know, I mean, that's really the significant thing there.
Yeah. So they had that, and then You know, going through that year, you know, I don't remember. I don't have a lot of memory of a lot of 2004 with him. But his challengers seem to have been Rene Dupree and a Rhino a lot.
Yep.
Kind of some surprising ones. But the big one, I'm trying to see who he faced at SummerSlam that year. I do know the cool thing that happened in the fall, and I'll build up to that. But Great American Bash, you had him, he did Booker T, Rene Dupree, and Rob Van Dam in a four-way elimination match. So he's starting to, you know, with Booker T and Van Dam in that match, that's a bit of a high-profile match. And then you go to SummerSlam, where he defeated Booker T in a match where I was actually at it. So, and I have no memory of that match. Maybe that wasn't
a super important match in the career.
Yeah. But what was most important is going forward is I really, really liked, and I think everybody should, going into that fall, they had the angle with him and Carlito, where Carlito basically had those vignettes building him up for weeks and weeks, and like they seemed to be on as long as the old Million Dollar Man ones. And then when he finally debuted, he had a big angle with Cena where he spit the apple in his face, and then he actually beat him for the title that night in his first actual match on TV. And I really think they could have done, you know, gone far with Carlito if he hadn't gotten, you know, all pilled up and lazy, but that was a really good debut for him. So
yeah,
and Cena put him over like a star.
I was just about to say, what's notable there, at least in my opinion, and I was watching at the time, that seemed like a pretty big surprise. And the reason it seemed like a big surprise is because John Cena was already a credible enough star.
Yeah.
Where you believe that somebody beating him made a difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and you know, you can look at the guys he wrestled. I actually remember liking the Rene Dupree stuff, but you can look at the guys he wrestled and say he didn't, that year was not that impressive. But I think he was clearly on the ascent in 2004. Like, yeah.
And really, when Bret Hart was IC champion, he didn't have that many impressive challengers. I mean, he worked a program with the Warlord, true. For God's sake.
That's true.
And Repo Man. And Skinner, so, but he's remembered as great IC champ. So
now this is wrestling culture. So we've got Dave eating, okay, but I feel like I need to contribute to the background noise real quick. So what people are going to hear, because we do this show is so professional, what people are about to hear is my washer and dryer coming on roughly simultaneously. So forgive me for this, hopefully less than 8 seconds. That this is going to be really, really loud and noisy. And Dave, you can talk about John Cena while I do that.
Yeah. So they had the whole thing with Carlito. And what is, I think it's a really great, memorable example of like one of those show long storylines. Like when you look at the WCW episode where they built up Ron Simmons winning the world title from Vader, or you know, I'm trying to think of other. Well, actually, the Clash of Champions with Rude winning the U.S. title from Sting. You know, just like great show-long storylines, or some ECW ones you'd see too. And this, it really works well when you do it like this. So, so that was a great thing, and then that kind of set him up. It gave him some time off to make a bad movie.
Well, they did that angle where he got stabbed at the club. Remember?
Yeah, with Jesus.
Yeah, they did the stabbing angle, which was one of my favorite ridiculous middle of the decade angles. Because when they first announced it on TV, they presented it like, I don't want to say they presented it like it was legit, because that I'm not sure that's right. But they presented it as something that was sort of outside the bounds of storyline. Yeah. And it clearly wasn't. So it was completely tasteless. Even by the standards of pro wrestling, which of course means I liked it, you know, but,
So he went off to make, I think, was that the Marine he made then?
It had to have been.
I think the Marine came before 12 rounds. They definitely came before Legendary. But anyways, I've never watched any of his movies.
But you've never seen the Marine?
I have not.
cinematic classic.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure you're not confusing it with the one starring The Miz?
Or Ted DiBiase Jr. Didn't he have a Marine movie?
He did. He did.
Oh.
So, that's yeah, so Cena takes time to. Off to be make Bad Movie, which is, you know, very, very in sync with, you know, the Hogan style of booking. So, and then he actually did come back, and I think he might have won the title back from Carlito, actually. Or I might be wrong in that. I might be out of my mind.
I'm woefully unprepared for this show, Dave. So don't try and lean on my points of view.
Yeah, he won the title back a month later, and that's about it. Yeah, going into 2005, he, you know, basically it was pretty. Wow, did you know that his full name is John Felix Anthony Cena?
No, I did not know that.
Okay, so JFAC for short. So going into 2005, you have him, you know, him and Batista are really the ones who are primed to, you know, climb the ladder and become the two champions, which is what they had at the time, which, you know, I think in some ways that's a little bit missed, but that's okay. Yeah, he was U.S. champion going into 2005, and then at the Royal Rumble, they had him and Cena, him and Batista. I think this is the one where they both went over the ropes at the same time. And were they both supposed to hit the floor at the same time?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I still don't know if that was something that was fucked up or if that was something that was supposed to happen. I know Vince McMahon blew his quads out right after that.
Well, I think the way they did it was that they were supposed to hit the floor at the same time, but Batista actually hit, and that's what made Vince lose it. I think if we had the following of Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, we'd have people writing into us, but maybe we'll get a couple tweets on it. But
yeah, fuck them.
And then, you know, you have the build up to where he then wins the title from JBL at Mania, and Not an awesome match to start off. It was really weird because the year before WrestleMania 20, you had an undercard full of like okay matches with two great world title matches, which were Guerrero and Angle, and Chris Benoit, he who shall not be named, versus Triple H and Michaels. And then the following year, you had an undercard full of really good matches, followed by two world title matches that were maybe okay, which is Cena and JBL, and then Batista and Triple H. So,
what's notable about that, though, is at this point in the game, really, Batista was the bigger star. I mean, we forget that now.
Yeah, no, like, I'd say he easily was. And I remember having people saying to me through the year, like, I get the whole thing with Batista. He's over as hell, but what's up with Cena? You know, and
yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, and you know what? The buy rates buy it out. I mean, Batista and Triple H did very good business, you know, and it was really the one Triple H feud during this era that did any kind of business at all.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very interesting because you look at it and you think, man, Batista could have been the guy. What kept him from being the guy? You know, and I'm not sure I can pinpoint any single thing. I don't know the answer to that. Because he was over and he did move business, and I think was better in the ring than people gave him credit for.
I think Batista was very good in the ring.
Yeah, it's just it's very odd because you look at this and you think, man, he's getting the first big Mania win over Triple H, and Cena, yeah, he's getting the title win, but he's beating JBL, who's sort of the low-hanging fruit as a champion. It's kind of weird to look at that now, almost 10 years later, and you know, given what happened with both guys' career trajectories very shortly after this, I might add, within a year.
And it was all through 2005, because he went against JBL there in a rematch. And then going into SummerSlam, I'm trying to remember, who would he have faced at SummerSlam that year? I'll get there in a minute. But basically, he was kind of seen as very much the manufactured champion. You know.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did. See, 2005 is a weird year for him because Was 2005?
Oh, he faced Jericho at SummerSlam, and then they had the farewell for Jericho the next night.
Yeah, they did the I Quit match with JBL that year, correct?
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the first match that most people really point to as the first great John Cena match. Where you had the bloody bloodbath, like, see, and it's this sort of great brawl. And yeah, it was sort of a WWE stagehand brawl, but it was very, very good for what it was. And I think that that match really stands out for a lot of people as the first great John Cena match. If you had to point to sort of the origin story of John Cena as a great worker, I think that's probably the match that gets pointed to the most. But what's interesting, I think, is what happened the rest of the year. Because, you had the Jericho stuff, and then, if I'm not mistaken, Dave, didn't he do stuff that year with Christian and Kurt Angle as well?
Yeah, he'd been working with Angle as well. And he actually, like, had a lot of, well, I mean, one of the big notable things is that they had the, not sure, I'm trying to see at what point it was that it happened, but they had the, draft, right? Where they switched him, and Batista going into the fall. And so he was now the champion on Raw. He'd gone from SmackDown. And I remember there was a big concern about, he's going to be shown up on live TV. Like, they can't do the tricks for them. They do an edit. So, but it was actually once he got to live TV that he really seemed to flourish.
Yeah, and I mean, that may have been the turning point with him and Batista, really, if you think about it.
Yep.
And funny,
one of the things that happened for Batista was injuries for sure.
Well, yeah, but Cena had his injuries too. Of course, he's insane and comes back after like a week. Yeah. But the Angle feud and the stuff that my memory of that was during the time period where Angle was, if I'm pretty sure that was during the time period where Angle was cutting promos like where he was like, I could come on TV and threaten to, urinate in Jesus Christ's mouth and get cheered. I mean, like, that's a minor exaggeration, but he was literally saying stuff like that. Like no joke. And I remember watching that at the time and thinking, are they trying to sabotage Cena as a face? And then I'd watch the matches, and the matches would be worked in such a way where it's not that, and the matches were fine. But my memory of the match is that Angle took a lot of the matches and did everything he could to make Cena not look like a big deal. And I'm not even saying that was a conscious decision on his part. It may have been the booking. It may have been the way the agents wanted the matches laid out. I just remember thinking it was really, really weird the way Cena was presented in that feud. Because if you're trying to get this guy over as your top star and as the top face, casting him in that light against Angle was an awfully weird way to do it, but that was just a really weird period. In many ways,
Angle was at that point seen as this like all time great. Who I still think he was great, but maybe with some of the psychology, didn't have some like as far as putting stuff over, didn't have some of that down. In ring, yeah, I thought he had a lot of great stuff. But, I mean, I think that might have played into it, too.
He was, Angle was a machine, for lack of a better term. And you can look at that as a positive, or you can look at that as a negative, depending on what you're looking for in pro wrestling. And there's certainly some Kurt Angle stuff that I like, and there's some Kurt Angle stuff that I absolutely hate. But you are right in the sense that he was thought of and had been promoted as sort of an all-time great at that point.
Yeah, and in 2002 through 2003 into 4, like, I think that was very accurate. And maybe the shine was starting to come off a bit around this time. And it was within a year of that he was out of the WWE.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird time for Angle. And it was a weird time for Cena, because this was really –
Well, everyone was calling for him to turn heel because people were booing him so much. But Vince was like determined to get him over.
This goes to show you how crazy it is. People have been calling for him to turn heel for 9 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been going on forever. And
the whole thing with Edge having the money in the bank, like, that was played off as kind of a desperation thing for them to have Edge go over him at New Year's New Year's Revolution, I think was the name of the show.
Yes.
With the Elimination Chamber.
That's a great match and another great John Cena performance, yeah. By the way.
And the thing that put Money in the Bank on the map, right? And it was seen as a very much a kind of a desperation ploy at the time because people were booing him so much. And then he got the title back 3 weeks later. But that was kind of where him and Edge came together as, like, you know, great rivals. So.
Yeah, that was a great match. It was a great angle, great use of the gimmick. I thought Cena in that match was outstanding. I mean, people forget. I mean, he was, you know, and this is nothing against, especially Chris Masters. I love Chris Masters. But he was tasked with making Chris Masters and Carlito look like guys who could legitimately beat him down the stretch of that match.
Yeah. who else was in this?
Oh, God, I don't even remember. I just remember thinking, man.
I'll get it.
They are really putting this guy in a weird position to have Chris Masters and Carlito be presented as big threats down the stretch of this thing. It was just really odd. But, you know, he stepped up. It was another big-time John Cena performance.
That match had John Cena going over Carlito, Chris Masters, Kane, Kurt Angle, and Shawn Michaels.
There you go.
Yeah. And then Edge defeated him afterwards. And then, you know, John Cena won it back. I was disgusted because I was so happy with Edge as champion. But it was the right call. And then I think a couple things happened right around then. They ended up going with him over him and Triple H at Mania, which really, you know, seems like kind of just a throwaway. But really, it really was a really good match.
And, it was a very good match. And I thought it was a match that John Cena needed.
Yeah, and it kind of was a bit of a passing of the torch. Like, when you saw him standing tall at the end of that match, it's like, okay, he's the guy. And one of the things that happened around then, too, is I heard Gabe Sapolsky be interviewed on Wrestling Observer Live by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. And, you know, he was, like, a guy who was, like, the cool knowledge guy at the time. He said one of the things he really enjoyed was, you know, John Cena on Raw. And, I don't know. To me, that made it okay to like him now. and I don't think it was Gabe that did that for people, but it was a point in time when it was becoming okay to like him.
Well, I do think by the middle of 2006, there was a real turning point. I mean, he would always and still has always gotten the boo and cheer reaction. But I think it became you know what happened?
It became a fun thing to be doing that.
That's true. And it also became. It also became increasingly hard to deny the guy was really good in the ring.
Yeah.
Like, because he kept having matches in these less than ideal situations. Like, situations where presumably it shouldn't have worked. Or like the situation where the deck would be stacked against him. And here's the Triple H match is a good example. Triple H has had a lot of stinkers, you know. And I wouldn't say that was a great match, but it was a good one. Maybe even a very good one. Another good example from this rough time period was the RVD match at One Night Stand 2.
Yep.
That match, I mean, RVD, in my opinion, was well past his prime by that point. But also, more to the point, that match, I mean, Cena had no chance in that setting.
Yeah.
None.
But, yeah, he was over like crazy in that
and
match.
They made RVD, made the absolute most of it. He completely played to the crowd he was in front of.
Yeah.
The match vastly exceeded. It was way better than it should have been. I mean, I'm not saying it was a great match. I don't even think it was the best match on the show. But,
yeah,
but
I think the only criticism of it is the way they did the finish with not doing the full.
The finish was terrible.
Yeah.
The finish was terrible. But that's, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, The bigger point is,
at this point, Cena was so big a star that they couldn't really have RVD go, or they didn't really want to have RVD go over him.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of that is the politics too. Like, Triple H did not, and you know, this is going to be my Triple H haterade moment, but I think a lot of that had to do with the idea of there was no way Triple H was going to have Cena job to RVD right after, you know, Cena had beaten him. I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. So that was not going to be a clean job, but you know, that was a great moment. I, you know, this is like kind of the period. I think 2006 and 2007 is like the all time Cena period from the perspective of he's consistently put in these positions where a guy who supposedly wasn't as good as people. It wasn't that good at the time. That was his rep. He wasn't that good. And he was consistently put in positions where the things should, there's no way they should have been as good as they turned out. And they, and the storylines were kind of built that way. Like, he's wrestling, you know, he's got this Elimination Chamber match. He's stacked against all these guys. He overcomes the odds. Then Edge beats him. He gets his belt back. He beats Triple H at Mania when Triple H is kind of this iconic guy. Then he goes and wrestles RVD, basically in RVD's backyard, loses, but only because of bullshit. You know, it wasn't because.
And that's where you first saw the banner, if Cena wins, we riot. And yes. It seemed like a very credible threat there in that ECW, yeah. Arena.
And this, and the thing is, this also led to the big setup, which was the TLC match with Edge, which was in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I was there, and it was awesome.
And here's the thing about that. That's a kind of, that's another match that sort of fits this theme of like Cena versus the world. Like, you know, and I remember at the time thinking, man, you know, and this was during 2006, 2007, yeah. And 2008 too was the high point of me going to these shows at sports bars. Like, I would go, like, I think I went to every single pay-per-view from 2006, 2007, 2008 at a sports bar that's right near my house.
One of the things that should be noted too is, like, during that 2006, that Cena, Edge, and RVD three-way feud was really hot. And basically it was RVD getting busted for pot that really put that to the side. But it was actually kind of what made the early ECW shows a little exciting. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it gave them more credibility. It made it feel like it wasn't just an offshoot, like, irrelevant brand, you know.
Wasn't just a zombie.
But, you know, 2000, I mean, that's the thing, is like, I was going to these shows, you know, I wasn't watching in isolation in my house. You know, I was watching with big groups of people, very diverse fan base. And, you know, it was funny to watch because Cena would come out for these matches, okay? And I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but you'll get the point. And we can cover this in a minute anyway. He'd come out for these matches versus an RVD or versus a Triple H, who a lot of these people hated, but for political reasons, you know. Or versus the Great Khali or Bobby Lashley in 2007 or whoever. And it was always, oh, man, fuck John Cena. And then when the match is going on, they're freaking out for all the near falls. They're losing their shit. They're going completely insane. And then, you know, and then it's like at the end, it's like, John Cena can't work. He fucking sucks. I'm like, you guys are the most pathetic people I've ever seen in my life. This guy has totally got you on the hook and you're too stupid to figure it out. It was just amazing to watch because his matches would get the biggest reactions of the night, you know, and then slowly, and by the end of 2007, I think it became almost a consensus view that, like, the guy was actually good, but they just didn't like him, you know. But it took so long for people to even be willing to acknowledge the idea that this guy was actually a good wrestler. Like, it was so hard for a certain segment of hardcore fans to come to grips with the idea that John Cena was actually a good performer. But by 2006 and the stuff with RVD and Triple H and Edge, I mean, by that point, it should have been evident to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to me, that was the year where it became indisputable that he was a very good in-ring performer at minimum.
Yep. And then you have the start of 2007, which everyone will probably immediately think of as, you know, the big last man standing match he had with Umaga at the Rumble. But I actually also need to – I also would like to point out – was it at the Rumble that he had that?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, because the big thing to me too is that people kind of forget that he actually had a title defense against Umaga at the New Year's Revolution show just before that. And it was like a 17-minute match. I'm not bringing that up from memory. I'm looking it up here. But Umaga pretty much dominated him. And then Cena kind of pulled out the win with a small package and, you know, really made Umaga still a credible challenger. And Cena just squeaked it out, which really did a lot to set up how great that Last Man Standing match was.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I, you know, that the whole Umaga feud was good. And I mean, look, that Last Man Standing match. I mean, there are a lot of people who who you know, that the Hardys and Eminem match on that show even more. I wouldn't go that far, although I think they're both great matches. But that's a match a lot of people cite as John Cena's best match and one of the best WWE matches in the last 10 years, you know? Yeah.
Well, what was great about it was Umaga was the Bruno-style challenger that was brought up. You know, like, it was exactly like the old legends you hear about, you know, guys being brought in and starting up the card against, you know, cannon fodder and gradually going up and up and then facing the challenger. You know, and, like, they got the program out of it, too, so...
Yeah, I thought that was a hell of a match, and I think it ages really well. I watched it not that long ago. I don't think it's really lost anything at all. You know, I to be honest with you, I don't think great match. To me, truly great matches never really lose anything. I don't, you know, if you watch the context around them, it can help. But a truly great match is a great match. But that whole feud was great. You could tell. It was a few where you could tell that Cena really liked working with the guy he was with too, I think.
Yeah.
Cause he did a lot to make Umaga look great. And that's a gimmick that easily could have died on its ass in 2007. Cause when that gimmick first debuted, there was a lot of people who were just immediately down on it as a sort of outdated, outmoded, ridiculous stereotype gimmick that would never work in the modern era. And hey, they were wrong.
It was actually tremendous.
Yeah.
And while I was at that Unforgiven show where Cena beat Edge in the TLC match, and people were going nuts doing the Armando Estrada's his shtick outside, you know? So
yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you go into WrestleMania that year, and he faced Michaels, and what was a pretty good match as well. And
great match.
Yeah, yeah. And what people really forget, too, is that in the period following... WrestleMania that year, like, you had Cena, Michaels, Orton, and Edge, and they were all just on fire in the ring. Like, the Mania main event was good that year, and then I think it was the pay-per-view after that was just tremendous. And, you know, one of the things I really remember is they had I think it was a Raw from England, and they had, like, a Cena and Michaels just had like an hour long match. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't set up as an Iron Man match. It was just one of those classic, like, actually going, just kept going, and they had an hour match. And I remember it being a very good match. Do you remember that one at all?
Yeah, it was an awesome match.
Yeah,
both Michael Cena matches were great.
It was at Backlash that they had the four way with those guys: Cena, Orton, Edge, and Michaels.
This is another thing that irks me is when people say, "Oh, well, Michaels is a great. He carried John Cena." If you watch that, especially the Mania match. I haven't watched the Raw match in a while, so I'm hesitant to comment on it. But if you go back and watch the Mania match, the idea that John Cena was the one being carried in that match is comical. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say Shawn Michaels was being carried, even though I think he kind of was, but there is absolutely that was not a Shawn Michaels carry job. Like, anytime I hear people say that, I'm like, you either didn't watch the match or you're insane. There's no way you can watch the John Cena Shawn Michaels WrestleMania match and come away thinking, man, Michaels dragged him kicking and screaming to a good match. I mean, that's just nuts.
Yeah.
It was a great John Cena performance and a great match, period. You know, and that's just the way it should be looked at as a great match. Forget any of the carry job shit. It was a great match. One of many that Cena would have on a big time setting over the years. Yes. You know, and the second one, you know, in back to back years versus sort of iconic names.
Yeah.
You know, that which,
those are a real 1-2 punch those 2 years, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then going into May, you had what was really possibly his greatest accomplishment of that couple year stretch, which is actually pulling really good matches out of the Great Khali, including at the pay per view.
Oh, I love the Judgment Day match. They're, like, that's one of the matches that's been disputed over at PWO, with some people absolutely hating it. I thought that was I actually watched that maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago on the network. Look, I still think that's a very good match. I said this, sort of jokingly on PWO, but it wasn't a joke. I actually like that better than most of the hype New Japan matches of the last 2 years. Like, to me, that was a really good match. I, you know, Cena's really good in that setting. He's really good versus the monsters. He's really good in the overcoming the odd gimmick matches. And that was just one example of when he's been good at that. If you, anytime they put him in that role, I feel like he's done well. He, you know, he had TV matches with guys like Viscera where they sort of put him in that role and he did well.
Yeah.
You know, the Mark Henry match a couple years after this, like, he's always done well in that role. So yeah, the Kali stuff was great.
Definitely.
And the Lashley match. The Lashley match in 2007 was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely. You know, Lashley's a guy who's improved a lot. I'll be candid and say I actually think Lashley's been pretty good overall this year in TNA, but you know, Lashley's gotten a lot better. Lashley was really green then, and you know, there's no he could sort of go through the motions and get things done, but that match was I thought they actually did a pretty good job promoting that match as something special, even though Lashley was clearly well below Cena on the pecking order. They at least tried to present him as a, not an equal, but as somebody who was a...
Well, he was the Cena on the rise, right?
That's right. That's a great way of putting it.
And the problem is like with the injury that came to him and other stuff that apparently happened internally, like that was Lashley's last hurrah in WWE, but it was quite a great one to go on.
Yes. Yes. And a very good, another good Cena performance, you know. So 2007, in many ways, you could argue 2007 was John Cena's best year. All the way up into the Orton feud at SummerSlam and all that stuff, you know. I mean, look, that Orton match, people say John Cena and Randy Orton have never had a good match, or a really good match. That match is awesome.
Yeah,
that's
the
best match.
I don't know how anyone could actually say that. It's just they've had too many matches.
That match was awesome. That was the best match of their feud. The build to it was really good. And my brother Devin,
is that when they were doing the stuff with John Cena's dad too?
Dad, yeah, the punt angle and everything. And you know, the thing about that is they were doing it around the house show. And my brother Devin always talks about how they did a show in Chattanooga in 2007 with those two guys. I think it was shortly before SummerSlam. And he swears up and down that those two guys had a match on a house show. And as somebody who's been to WWE house shows and seen the quality of these shows, this would not shock me. Devin says he would do a house show match that was even better. You know, that was just out of this world great between those two. And I went to a house show match this year, early this year, where those two had a cage match together that was probably one of the 15 best matches I've seen all year. Just out of this world great, with John Cena getting one of the loudest reactions I've ever seen at a live show for a wrestler. Like in the absolute top three or four I've ever seen live. So yeah, you know, this was 2007 was a real strong year for Cena up until the injury. You know, the injury kind of sucks. I've always wondered how long they would have kept the belt on him.
Yeah, I think he was good to go for a while.
I mean, like I've always thought, because I think he had it for like 13 months or something.
Yeah, and well, it was during that period that one of the things that really hit home, I think, it was during that period that Meltzer noted that he had now had so many days as champion that he'd actually surpassed Bret Hart, I think.
Or that sounds right.
Who's next after Bret Hart? And it's
that
like Meltzer would say, like, it's one of those things where you don't realize something's happening when it's happening, that you're watching, you know, something great. And, yeah, so, you know what? I mean, from there is his Mania stuff for a couple of years. I'm not sure if he's had big Mania stuff since then, really.
No, it's weird. It's like Well, I would argue the Batista match was a big match.
Yes, that is correct.
That was a big match and a very underrated match. That, in fact, their whole feud was underrated.
Yeah, the biggest problem you can ever see with their feud is that I think was it in 2009 that they had the whole Mike Adamly thing, and they just kind of randomly put together with no build a match with them at SummerSlam that had never happened.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And then they had their big match at Mania that year, which could have been a bigger deal without the – well, and actually, he got hurt in that match too, actually. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But
yeah, well, him and Batista against each other was pretty damn cool.
But Dave, we can't skip over the 2008 Royal Rumble.
Oh, no. No.
The surprise of all surprises, one of the rare times in wrestling since the Monday Night War era, really, when I was legitimately surprised by something.
Yeah.
Like, and probably, I would say the single biggest reaction I've ever seen at a sports bar for something was the return of John Cena at the 2008 Royal Rumble. The reaction when he came out and his music hit was, I mean, and again, these are people who hate John Cena because he's terrible and he can't wrestle, who were just losing their fucking shit when he came out. I mean, just going completely apeshit. It was really a great moment.
If I'd known about it ahead of time, I wouldn't have wanted him to win, but seeing him come back like he did and seeing him win was pretty damn cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I completely agree with that. It wasn't like I was like, oh, man, yeah, Cena's back. He's going to win. Oh, absolutely not. You know, I wasn't looking for him to win, you know. But it was.
But it worked so well that he did.
It was such a great surprise. I mean, and you see that so rarely in modern wrestling. You know, the culture's changed with the internet and everything. It's just so hard now to pull off anything like that. And.
Well, and you don't see the jumps like you used to, so.
Yeah. I mean, that was really. In many ways, that was the last major surprise I can think of in wrestling. A great, great moment. Really great moment. You know, 2008 is kind of a weird year for Cena, though. I don't remember. I remember it being a real. I guess letdown is the right word. Just like a real come down from 2007.
Yeah.
Not at that level.
Well, they weren't. I mean, the problem is at this point they're doing a lot of. At this point they're doing a lot of retread of him and Triple H. You know, that's who we faced at Night of Champions, and then you go through, you know, Great American Bash. It was him and JBL. Like, I mean, we've seen these things before, and they weren't really putting him in with new guys.
Yeah, and that. That's a recipe for disaster for any wrestler, but it doesn't help if you're a wrestler where there's already sort of a backlash against you.
Yeah. Now, one thing that did actually kind of start that year that was kind of cool was that he formed a trio for a little while there with Crime Time.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and I think they spray painted CTC, and that was even kind of cool. And I think that was after Crime Time had been fired and come back, right?
I think you're right. I think that was the second wave of Crime Time, the Great Crime Time.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's tremendous. Dave, you shoehorned in a Crime Time reference on this podcast tonight. That's great.
Yeah. Well, if I was really ambitious, I'd get me and you to sing
Brooklyn. No.
Or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Crackhead. Or Frozen, yes.
That's not going to happen. Let it go, Dave. Let it go.
Let it go.
There is an awful lot of Frozen stuff in Disney, I'll tell you.
Oh, I'm certain of it.
That movie is a license to print money. But anyway.
Vince should take lessons.
Yes.
He should do a Frozen angle.
He should do a Frozen angle with Yeah, he should have
the wrestler that gives warm hugs.
he should have
Sorry, I'm in
the. Yeah, you are. You totally are.
No, that's good. That's great. And being an actor.
Hornswoggle. I couldn't remember the midget's name. The midget. They should have Hornswoggle playing Olaf for a while.
What was the other thing? You cut him off.
Okay, you're interrupting a lot. So, anyways. So we go into 2009, and yeah, again, we're this is kind of like the era. What was really interesting to WWE at this point was Chris Jericho, really. So, you know, Cena's I'm trying to remember what he even did at Mania that year. It was probably in a world title match.
In 2008?
Yeah, 2009. Oh, we're into 2009 now.
Oh, God.
I'll get it here. Yeah, it was him and Big Show and Edge where John Cena won the title with Edge being champion, right? So that's one of the problems we're having there is we're having a few years there where it's just a lot of retreads. And then I do believe he got hurt again that year.
Too much cocaine.
Yeah. And then, I guess probably the biggest thing, like, we can, what, so 2010, you would have had the match with Batista.
The whole Batista angle was great. Okay. The whole storyline was great. I thought their last man standing match was great. A lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was great. to me, those two, it's a shame that we didn't get more. It's like, for as badly overexposed as the Orton Cena stuff was, and even arguably the Edge Cena stuff by the end, they really could have gotten a whole lot of more miles out of his feud with Batista. I mean, that's it's a shame that those two really didn't mix it up more than they did, because I think they had great chemistry, and I think that feud in 2010 was really, really good.
You know what else is unfortunate too is that, I mean, he was in a position to put say Sheamus over, but I mean, at that point in time, they just really had a lot of trouble giving anyone a clean win to become champion for the first time.
So. Oh, they've been terrible at that. I mean, look, the reason is, like, you know why Rusev's so over, Dave? Because he doesn't lose.
Yeah. Who would have thought, right?
They don't do the even Steven booking with him. And that's why I'm hoping when he eventually wrestles Cena, which you know is coming soon, maybe real soon, I'm hoping that he beats Cena and beats him clean. I don't think Cena should be the guy to beat him.
No. And, yeah, I guess the big thing is, like, I mean, he's just become the guy who always made you, oh, well, and then 2011, 2012, what was I saying? He had the stuff with Rock 2 years in a row. Some people would say not great matches, but they were pretty important at the very least.
Hugely huge important. Business.
Yeah.
And I hated the matches, but they were hugely, but that's not Cena's fault. I mean, look, let's just be candid. Rock during this time period, the time period in question, is one of the worst wrestlers of all time. I mean, just absolutely awful, dreadful in the ring. Nobody was going to have good matches with him. 1989, Ric Flair was not going to have good matches.
They were spectacles, though, for sure.
I mean, well, they drew money. They drew huge houses, and
the environment was cool.
Yes.
The atmosphere.
You know, and you know, I people can criticize Cena for a lot, but they built three manias, really, including the one I went to, 27. They built three manias around the Cena Rock feud, and they all did great business.
Yeah, so when I said you didn't have big mania stuff from then on, of course I was wrong, and I will backtrack on that. But what I do like is that he got into the position coming out of those, because those are huge, right? He got into the position coming out of those to then face Bray Wyatt this year. And I really think, I remember he did the whole angle where the future of the WWE goes through me. And I really hope they do more and more of that. Because they really are doing pretty well with the youth movement. And having him as a part of that to build up these guys, it's pretty great.
I agree in theory, but I don't agree in practice. And what I mean by that is, I think the Cena feud ended up hurting Bray. Because Bray really never won anything out of that. You know, I mean, now that's not, to be fair, that's not Cena's fault.
The thing is, they also had some matches that weren't great.
Yes. Yeah. But they're, although their last man standing match was great, I thought. But the problem is, they, you know, you ultimately, Bray doesn't necessarily have to win the feud, but he has to win at least one match in a convincing, decisive fashion.
Yeah,
he should have won a Mania. There's no excuse for it.
Yeah.
If you're going to have the balls to book that match, which was a risky match to book, then what possible reason would you have for not giving Bray the win?
I know this is a serious topic for you because you're kind of whispering.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm getting very serious now, Dave. This is emotional to me, but. Seriously though, I don't in theory I agree with you, but in practice I don't know so much. I mean, we've glossed over some stuff here, you know, because I mean the really big,
we've been talking a while too.
The big Cena thing though that we've glossed over is 2011, the CM Punk stuff.
I'm an idiot.
I mean you can't, I mean
those are some of his greatest moments, yeah.
I mean, we glossed over some Big Show stuff that I thought was really good too.
But the punk thing I think is huge, because the punk thing, look,
I think that's his best performance.
And here's the reality. I know for an absolute fact that John Cena lobbied to lose to CM Punk at Money in the Bank. That there were people in WWE Creative who wanted John Cena to win that match, including the people who are typically the decision makers in WWE Creative at the end of the day. And John Cena, I don't want to say he put his foot down. That might be an exaggeration. But he himself made the case that CM Punk had to win. Had to win. So, you know, that to me was huge. Those guys have excellent chemistry. I mean, he has great chemistry with Umaga, like we talked about, or I guess I should say had. I don't think they're going to be having any new matches.
Probably.
He had great chemistry with Batista, in my opinion. But I really think
he actually had not bad chemistry with Miz, even.
It was okay. I didn't hate it. But to me, the punk feud, that's his Flair Steamboat. And people will say, oh, that's crazy. Don't compare it. And yeah, in some ways it is. But these guys really had great matches, whether it was random TV matches, house show matches that showed up on tape, the big pay-per-view matches, obviously the big moment at Money in the Bank. Look.
Yeah, you could say it was some of the best stuff either of them ever did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they both did some other great stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, great big matches, like the kind of matches that like you watch as a fan, and you're not going to forget them. You know, they stick with you.
I remember liking that match where Cena won the title from Mysterio too on Raw. That
was a great match, but a stupid match. It's another example.
Oh, it was like a bad decision, but it was a good match.
Great match, stupid match. The match that killed my daughter's interest in I shouldn't say killed it, because she still watches to a degree, but that the decision to have Cena win after doing the tournament, and Ray wins this tournament, and then he turns around and has to wrestle a fresh guy that night and loses the belt to him. I mean, it's the most heelish shit ever. Like, if you're ever going to turn John Cena heel, that's the time to do it right then.
Yeah,
you just made him look like a complete dick.
So I guess a couple of the other things too to touch on with Cena is, what do you like? I don't think they're certainly out of their minds to have not turned him heel at this point. I don't think it's a great idea unless they have something wonderful to do with it, like a great baby face for him to put over.
I disagree. I think the time is well. I think there have been very good opportunities to turn Cena heel, and they have not been taken. I think there were really some potentially brilliant ways to do it. You know, to me, the best way to do it would have been to have him be the person who beats the Undertaker streak at Mania and have him do it by cheating.
Yeah.
I still think that's what should have happened. I will always think that's what should have happened. You know, but whatever. I also think that they had a real opportunity for this year for Plan C. You know, the big match with Lesnar. Plan C could have been Cena, and it could have been an authority double cross, you know, of Brock. Have Cena win with the help of the authority. Turn Brock baby. Turn Cena into the ultimate corporate champion, which the fans all think he is anyway. That's why he gets booed in the first place. You know, and I really think there was an opportunity there to turn him heel. At this point, I don't think there really is a good opportunity to turn him heel. So now I think what they need to be doing is he needs to be a guy who puts over Rusev and continues the yep. build of Rusev. You know, that's what I think the right use of him is right now. But I do think now, having said that, I think a lot of the clamoring for him to turn heel, I would say up until the last year, maybe even 2 years, a lot of it's just been ridiculous.
Yeah. like there's a lot of money in him as a baby face is the thing.
And it's not, and, you know, it is the money, you're right. I mean, the merchandising and everything. But it's also just like, it's like people feel like they have to want him as a heel because it's some sort of hardcore fan rite of passage to want John Cena to be a heel.
Yeah.
Like there's no thought put into it at all.
And it shouldn't be done just for the sake of doing it.
No. That I 100% agree with. I mean, if you're going to turn him, it needs to be in the right situation and have a strong purpose behind it. He's too big of a star.
Because otherwise, 2000 WCW.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The thing is, his heel turn is going to mean so much because of how well he's been protected as the top face that you can't throw a heel turn away on him if it doesn't mean anything, which is why. But I think they had two good opportunities to do it this year. You know, I think they had a great opportunity in 2011. I really do. After the angle where he won the title, like you mentioned, with the great Ray match on Raw, you know, I thought that was a great opportunity then. You know, they've had chances. And I do think his babyface character is painfully stale. I completely agree with that. But it's a tough situation for them.
Do you think he should get the title? No, I mean, I don't think he should get the title back from Lesnar.
No. I mean, they've booked themselves into a really bad situation right now. I think, and I suspected this was going to happen, but I really believe this. To me, look, and I like Brock Lesnar as a performer. In fact, I like him a lot as a performer.
When he performs.
But look, he's a joke. I mean, it's a joke. Like, people say, oh, it makes the title feel more special. No, it makes the shows he's not on feel worthless. That's what it does. And he's not on any show. So they've completely – it was an idiotic decision to put the belt on. I mean, it's just really stupid.
Well, the match all they had to do was save the match for a few months, right? I mean,
of course.
How hard is that? You know,
I mean, it's bad enough. Like, it's bad enough that they did this, but now what's the explanation for why we aren't getting title matches? What's bad the booking? There's not even they're not even making one. They don't even care. Like, you know, it's just stupid. And now they put themselves in a position where we're gonna get Cena Brock again. And look, I've liked the matches, and I like both guys, but I don't think people want to see that again.
Well, I think if they what would be good, I know you'll disagree with this, but if they had Cena, if their mentality to just get the title off Brock, which with the way things have been going, they probably need to be, you know, have Cena win the title and then have Rollins cash in Money in the Bank and go for a three-way Shield match for the title at Mania.
Well, I mean, look, I don't like Rollins as a heel, but he's got Money in the Bank. He's got to do something with it.
Yeah.
I mean, do I even watch his segments anymore? No, I don't. I'm not even going to lie.
I like him as a heel, actually.
I mean, to me, he's unwatchable. But you know, they've put him in the position they've put him in. They got to do something with the guy. You know, I mean, to me, Cena should be feuding with Rusev. You know, maybe not right now, but that should be his focus. That should be where they're going with him. Brock, I don't know what you do with him. You know, they've screwed themselves royally there. You know, a part of me thinks that the best deal would be for Batista to come back and beat him, but I don't even know if those cards are on the table. I don't even know if that's possible.
And you would obviously love – well, that actually might be something worthwhile. You would obviously love for Ambrose to beat him, but they're not going to do that, I don't think.
Oh, I would love for that, but they're never going to do that. No. Yeah. I mean, I would love that, but that's pure fantasy. There's no chance of that happening. That's probably what should happen, but there's no chance of that happening at all.
I guess one of the things that I'd really like to talk about, and what I really think is kind of one of my biggest things that I'm most interested in for this show, is really talking about Cena's place among the all-time greats, specifically as far as WWE like aces go. Because I think comparing him with the WWE aces is feasible compared to, say, you know, let's talk about him, you know, in comparison to Frank Gotch or Jim Londos, you know.
Well, as a drawing card, he's not Hogan, he's not Bruno, he's not even Backlund, although there's things about Backlund that I think are
he's even got Backlund beef for longevity now. Like,
he has Backlund beef for longevity.
The only person he's second to is Bruno, as far as that goes.
Backlund was a more consistent draw. He was. But Backlund also inherited a very hot territory, and Cena inherited Triple H's mess.
Yeah.
So you look at completely different set of situations.
And it's different ways of drawing. Like, it's the pay-per-view buy rates. You know, it's like that's and the merchandise. Like, these are completely different types of business. Like, he's maximized a lot of the business that they've had these years. And, you know, like, the Rock was a big part of those monster buy rates, monster numbers for those two manias. But, you know, I mean, it's not like they put him in there against Kofi Kingston.
See, I mean, thank God for that. Cena,
if God does have any part to play in wrestling, I think it would be in making sure that it wasn't Rock versus Kofi Kingston.
Well, he does have a part. He's Vince McMahon's opponent.
Yes, this is true.
Cena, I think he's clearly. I'll say this: he's clearly ahead of Shawn Michaels as a star. I mean, that's not even debatable. Like that's not even something for the realm of debate. Like, no matter how much WWE has tried to present Shawn Michaels as his all-time level star, the reality is John Cena is a much bigger star in terms of drawing money, overall impact to the promotion at his time there. I mean, it's literally not close. Bret Hart, much bigger star than Bret Hart. Much, much, much bigger star than Bret Hart.
Randy Savage.
Savage. More
I'd say
iconic.
He's bigger than Savage. Yeah.
You know, Savage is more iconic, I think, because of the era he was in.
I don't know that he is, though, man.
I would say he was, but the problem with Savage is his peak was really short. You know, I mean, he doesn't have.
You got to think about kids who grow up having watched John Cena. Like, he is iconic to that.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I mean that. You know, and I'd put Cena's like importance to the history of WWE. I'd put him over Backlund.
Yeah, I would too. If you're talking importance to the WWE, yes, I agree with that.
And you know, like as far as being a star goes, I put him way over him too.
He's not Bruno. He's not Hogan. He's not Austin. He's not The Rock.
No. I think that's
anybody,
as far as you can push it, right?
Anybody after those four guys, I think at minimum you can make a case for him being a bigger star.
Yeah.
And he might be number five. I mean, he might be the fifth guy after those guys.
And the thing is, like, he has had a longevity that, you know, he did not have the highs of Rock or Austin. But his longevity counts for something.
Oh, yeah. And especially because people say, oh, well, especially now with the network and everything. But, you know, a couple of years ago, people say, oh, well, WWE's not what it was. Their buy rates are down, their TV, blah, blah. It's like, okay, yes, they also have way more TV hours than they've ever had. They have far more revenue streams than they've ever had. You know, like, the company's completely diversified.
Yeah, and they did it with a lot of money that they made during the Rock and Austin years. But it was during the Cena years that they took that money and made it into ridiculous amounts of money.
Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. John Cena's way bigger star than Triple H. I mean, there's a lot of people who would argue that, say, oh, no, Triple H, blah, blah, blah. Triple H was a coattail guy who rode the coattails of superior talent. The soon as he became the top star, the company fell on its ass. He's probably the most overrated star in the history of wrestling in terms of his actual impact and drawing power. Cena is, you know, the more I think about it, probably number five. Probably number five for WWE, which is pretty impressive. You know, that's pretty impressive.
Do you think there's a way for him to creep up to being like Rock and Austin are almost equal to me.
I have Austin above Rock.
But it's a tough call.
Like I don't think the only way Cena could pass either of those guys is if there was a boom period. You know, I mean, like, as if there was a real, like, a real boom. It doesn't have to be at the level of what those guys did, but you know, you'd have to have another wrestling boom period for me to feel comfortable putting him above those guys. Because when it comes to, like, when you're assessing somebody as, like, a drawing card and as a star, peak matters a ton in that context.
Yeah.
Having the outstanding peak, to me anyway, matters a ton. And, you know,
and one of the things, too, is over the past couple of years, you've had a lot of guys come in who are the work rate guys, like the Shield guys especially, right?
Sure.
And if you have that kind of style, create a bit of a boom, and Cena is kind of like the late 80s, early 90s Jumbo in that, Jumbo Saruta, that could be pretty cool. You know, like, that would be a big role for him, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Dave, that's not completely out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see them booking something like that. That's a feasible scenario that you just outlined.
And that would be fantastic. I mean,
that could
be done really well, you know.
As a worker, you know, to look at that from the other perspective, as a worker, I don't think there's ever been a WWE ace better than him.
Exactly. Ever. And that's where, in some ways, you could argue him being up there with any of those guys who were in the top five above him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look. If you're looking at this as an in-ring calculus, and you're looking at this as an in-ring calculus, particularly based on the time when the guys were big-time players in the WWE, there's nobody that's been better than him.
And he's a good program guy, too.
Yeah, there's nobody that's been better than him.
You could argue he's better program. I mean, I know Bruno would say about Hogan that Hogan wasn't a big program guy because he didn't do a big return business with opponents. And, you know, I'd say Cena's done better with that.
I mean, look at the guys that he's had good matches with. Then look at the guy. I mean, we didn't even talk about the first Lesnar match. I mean,
no.
The first Lesnar match is one of the best matches I've ever seen in my life.
And that was 2012.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. People can bitch about the finish all they want. The reality is that was a tremendous match. Absolutely tremendous match. Like this guy.
And so was this year's. Like this SummerSlam one was like brilliant. It wasn't like that, but it was like it was a spectacle. Like you
brilliant
don't see.
Brilliant match, and also the kind of match that sort of puts the lie to this notion of John Cena as the selfish guy who doesn't do anything to get anybody else over. There's never been a wrestler in the history of wrestling who's done anything like that. No ace in the history of pro wrestling has ever done anything like that, ever. Not once.
Yeah.
You can't find it. Never happened. The
closest you can come is maybe Inoki with Vader, and that was bad. So.
Yeah, even then, Inoki wasn't really the ace anymore. I mean, he was, you know, he was past his prime. He wasn't the top star in New Japan at that point. I mean, he was a legend, you know. He was kind of like, but like, this is...
But this was also effective.
Yeah. I mean,
so that was something that was, as a concept, was similar. But this in execution was not even the same universe.
I look, the guys had tons of good matches and an awful lot of great ones.
Let's list some of the great people he's had feuds with, like, you know, great programs with. Michaels, even Triple H, you know, Jericho, Punk.
Edge, and I don't even like Edge.
Yeah, RVD, Big Show, Carlito, Lesnar. You know, like Wyatt.
Kayfed. He did a pretty good angle with Kayfed.
That was awesome. Kayfed is probably the most underrated wrestler the first decade of the century.
the Mark Henry angle from last year.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this guy, and yes, you can point to things he's done and angles he's had and feuds he's had that did not work out the way they should have, that have produced bad matches here and there. I mean,
and he had some bad one-liners as a result of Brian Gwitz, but
yeah, I mean,
you know what? Hulk Hogan said so many more dumb things than John Cena has, especially when you consider how much camera time Cena's had. He's had more camera time than any of those four guys that we've got above him as far as importance of
the company. Oh, that's the other thing, is the stresses of his role are dramatically different. I mean, people could say, well, he wrestles less. Okay, fair enough. But
not
his
that
actual
much.
his television presence is unbelievable because they have so many hours of TV.
And you know, I mean, this is a guy who rushes back from injury. This is a guy who has good matches with the wretched of the earth, absolute guys who can't work at all, can't move. He has classics when he's in a position to have classics. You know, I mean, the one knock I think you can make against John Cena is you can make the argument that he's never – nobody
sometimes,
is
– Sometimes he's not selfish enough.
Well, that's true. But he's never – you could argue he's never put anybody over who has maintained their momentum after beating him. But that's because the booking sucks. That's not his fault.
Yeah.
It's not his fault they fucked up CM Punk. It's not his fault that they fucked up Daniel Bryan after the great match. Another match we didn't even talk about. The great match those two had last year.
Oh, God, you know, yeah.
Like, it's not his fault that they fucked this stuff up.
I still go back, and I think other than the Orton stuff, I do think that was a 5-star match.
Oh, the Daniel Bryan match?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have, like, I'm not a star rating guy. I have no problem with somebody rating that 5 stars. But here's the thing. John Cena is such a good wrestler. This is how great a wrestler John Cena is, in my opinion. I'm not even sure that would be one of my 5 favorite John Cena matches. And I love that match. That's a great match. That's not a knock on the match. I don't know if I'd rate that as high as the Money in the Bank match with Punk. I don't know if I'd rate it as high as the Umaga Last Man Standing match. I don't know if I'd rate it as high as the Michaels WrestleMania match. I don't know if I would rate it as high as the first Lesnar match. There are matches like Cena's had so many great matches that a match like that, which you call 5 stars, and I wouldn't even necessarily dispute that. That might not even be a top 5 Cena match for me. Almost certainly wouldn't be top 3. You know, and that's a legitimately excellent match that could have easily been anybody's match of the year last year. In a very good year, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, this guy.
And there still might have been stuff we forgot.
Oh, look. You know, there's. I remember he had matches.
Even him and Michaels had the tag belts, too.
I mean, he had matches, I think it was in early 2009, but I could be wrong. Against Big Show, where they had some matches on TV, and I think they did a pay-per-view match too. And I remember really thinking those were good, like really good matches at the time when they aired. Like thinking, man, these are really, really good TV matches, you know. And you know, I mean, like he had the match with Ziggler from TLC. Was it 2 years ago? That was a really good match, good match against a guy that. A lot of top stars historically would never have worked as hard as Cena did to have a good match with Ziggler. They really wouldn't have, you know. They would have done just enough to make him not look like a complete asshole, and then they would have put him out, you know.
Can you imagine if Cena had had great booking behind him and some of these opponents?
Oh, I mean, if Cena had been booked even reasonably well, forget great. Just reasonably, just competently. If he had been booked competently, I think he'd pretty much universally be regarded as one of the best of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, across the board. It's just, and look, is his execution the best? No. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's got great execution. But wrestling isn't all about execution. You know, the guy's got great timing. He's an underrated bumper. At his best, his selling is tremendous. He does a lot of things really, really well in the ring, you know. And I mean, look, there are a litany of matches we could point to. I just thought, here's another one, Dave. We didn't mention the Cesaro stuff.
Oh yeah, that.
I mean, like you literally there's so many things with this guy, and you know, some people say, well, it's you know, it's that's just a byproduct of an era where there's a lot of stuff on TV. Well,
no.
Not really.
If the stuff was bad, you could say that you know, it's just because he's had so much on TV that some of it looks bad. But this stuff can't look. You can't have that much that looks great because you're on TV so much. If anything, that'd expose you.
Yeah. exactly. I mean, I remember he had a match with Jericho. On my wedding anniversary, I think it was. I think they had a match on April 20th one year, a couple years back. That was really good.
really good match, like just a random Raw match. Like
the anniversary of the wedding of Dylan and Jen and of Columbine.
And 420 for all you weed smokers out there. Which is hilarious because anybody who knows me and my wife knows we don't smoke weed.
You are more than willing, however, to spend an inordinate amount of time discussing ways to put a pet turtle into a hamster ball.
that is true.
Anyone's wondering, that was pretty much the hot topic of discussion the day we were hanging out in Charleston. So.
And if anybody
that
is
and social justice.
If anybody is an animal an animal rights activist listening to this, don't worry, we've not done it yet.
It was just a theory. And there's lots of ways to do it in which would be safe for the animal. All that being said, I gotta say, like, I mean, we're saying that, you know, like, Cena's number 5 in WWE Ace history. I think that's when you bring in, like, the pure drawing power. But you know what? As far as importance to the history, like, I'd say you could almost consider him top 3. No, it really depends, right?
I don't think you can put him over Austin. You maybe could put him over Rock. That's debatable. I don't think you can put him over Bruno, Hogan, or Austin. I don't really feel comfortable putting him over Rock, but I could see the case because Rock's run was so short.
Yeah.
So I could see the case. And I mean, if there's some people listening to this may say, well, what about somebody like Undertaker? It's not really comparable. I mean,
Undertaker hasn't been the ace. Undertaker has been the Andre the Giant.
Yes, that's exactly the right. And if you wanted to make an argument, if somebody wanted to say that Andre, for example, was a bigger deal to WWF history, WWF WWE combo history than Cena, I'd listen to that argument. I would, but I maybe even could be convinced of it. But Andre was not the ace, like you said.
Yeah.
So it's a different calculus.
Here's of course the question. You know, like, do we think we could take Cena and put him back in Bruno's role and have him be Bruno?
I don't think anybody could have been Bruno other than Bruno, to be honest.
Do you really think you could bring Bruno forward and have him be Cena?
No.
I think Cena would have done a better job going back and being Hogan than Hogan would doing coming forward and being Cena.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's
just because I do like Hogan in ring, but he's not Cena.
I do too. No, he's not. Yeah. Hogan at his best can be a very good worker, but Hogan at his best and Cena at his, I mean, Cena at his best is an extremely adaptable wrestler. Yeah. Hogan was never adaptable. I mean, he was very good at his own thing, but he was not an adaptable wrestler.
Yeah.
Cena is an exceptionally adaptable wrestler.
And one of the things is Cena brings in a lot of the stuff that Rock and Austin both had of having the weekly stuff and, you know, like having the weekly, like the, as far as I'm concerned, some of the stuff with Austin and the Hart Foundation in 1997 is some of the best TV of all time, wrestling wise.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And Cena, you know, fits into that era of doing that kind of stuff, as far as the weekly stuff goes. But he also has more comparisons to Bruno or Hogan than those guys do, because those guys had shorter runs.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
Yeah. So I mean, it's hard to make a direct comparison, but I mean, there's no question that he's top 5.
Oh no, I think it's really hard to put him lower than 5th. I really do. I think you could make an argument for Backlund on the strength of how strong Backlund did draw, okay. But it bothers me. I just don't think it's right to make that comparison because to me Cena wins because
there's no question Cena could go back and be Backlund.
Yeah, and yes, not only that, well, that's 100% true. But
and
it's
I like
Backlund,
that. By the way.
It's not just that. It's also the fact that Cena did not, I mean, how much, you know, Backlund inherited basically the Bruno WWF.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, I mean, like,
well,
yeah,
not,
oh,
not
yeah.
only that, but to in some people's mind, he was still part of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, he was. I mean, Bruno was still doing angles, you know, hot angles that were drawing as well or more than Backlund at times. You know, like, so, you know, Cena inherited Triple H's shit. You know, I mean, see, like, Cena inherited a world after all the most of the WCW and, you know, top guys that could have been potential rivals or whatever have been killed off. You know, I mean, like, there's really Cena had tons of disadvantages.
Yeah.
Tons historically.
He built it back up. Like, and he defined an era.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think he's to me, he's an all-time great. I've made this point before, Dave, and I really stick with it. To me, Cena was the last active performer that really needed to go into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame as an active performer. After, I'm not saying I would
so
never
far,
vote.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would never vote for an active performer again. I'm not saying that. But if you look at the guys that are either on the ballot now as active performers or on the horizon as active performers, to me, the gap between Cena and them is so massive. Like, I mean, it's just not even close. And some of these guys are guys I really like. I mean, I really like CM Punk, but he's not even in the universe as John Cena as a Hall of Fame candidate. It's not even close. No. Tanahashi, even if you think he should have gone in, and I mean, I know you do. I mean, Tanahashi's really not in the universe of John Cena as a Hall of Fame candidate. He's just not.
No, he's not.
And that's the thing. I mean, to me, Cena is the last guy who
you
really
couldn't make any argument with Cena.
That's right. There was
other than you don't think active performers should go in. There was no other argument.
And that's why as a guy voting now, you know, you know, we'll talk about this more probably on what very well could be our next show, because the Hall of Fame issue comes out, I think, in 2 weeks, Dave said.
Yeah.
But you know, to me, I as a voter, to me, John Cena might be the you know, I've already made up my mind that the results of this year's vote are going to determine how I vote some in the future. But you know, even setting that aside, I really feel like John Cena is the last guy that, you know, I would have felt compelled to, you know, and that kind of, you know, brings us back to where we started with him. And I just, to me, he is the last of a sort. I don't think
guys
like him anymore.
You don't know what's coming in the future, right? Like, I think someone who's going to be, this person won't be John Cena. But someone who's going to be a star in a way that you wouldn't have predicted at one point, I think, is going to be Charlotte.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that 100%.
Like, I think she's going to go mainstream. So.
I could see it. She's got more appeal than you know. But then again, WWE is so stupid, Dave.
They are.
It's really hard to assume that they're going to get anything right. I don't want to end this show on that negative note, though. So say something positive before we wrap it up.
I mean, the thing is, like, we've compared Cena to the all-time greats of WWE aces. But, I mean, even as far as some of the classic NWA champions, like, I'd say he, you know, like, is he more important to the history of the business than Jack Briscoe? Quite possibly.
I would lean towards saying yes.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on Jack Briscoe. I just would lean towards saying yes.
And I don't know, like, Dusty, you know, like, these are questionable, you know? So I think that doesn't downplay Dusty or Piper or anyone like that. It just shows how huge Cena is.
Yeah. Cena is an upper tier all-timer.
He's an all-time great.
Is he top 20? I don't think he's top 20.
Top 20 US?
Top 20 US.
Absolutely.
Very possible. Yeah. Very possible. That's you know, and top 30? Very possible. And when I would say almost definitely top 30. And when you're looking at him as a worker, you know, look, for the purposes of that greatest wrestler ever poll project that we're doing over at ProWrestlingOnly.com, I'm telling you, he could be in my top third. I mean, he really could. I'm not
Don't
saying
put
he
the
will
sleeper
be
on Cena.
I'm not saying he will be. I'm just saying I don't think he's an outrageous guy to have in that top level.
Can I ask
really
a question here, Dylan?
Yes.
Do we think we're going to rant for another little bit? Because I'm judging whether or not I run to pee by doing that.
I think this is a good time to end the show.
Because Dave's going to pee.
Because Dave's got to pee.
John Cena is an all-time great, and Dave's got to pee.
We've talked up John Cena. Dave's got to take a leak. I'm fucking cold. There's sirens going crazy around my house. I've got to change the laundry again. I don't want to do two laundry changes on the air. So this is a good time to end the show. But we finally did the John Cena show, Dave.
Yeah, and thanks everybody for listening. I think this is actually, this may be one of our better shows since we kind of came back from our hiatus there. So
we mostly stayed on topic.
Yeah, we did. So
everybody go watch some John Cena versus Rene Dupree matches. On that
you
note,
do that.
Dave,
and Kenzo Suzuki. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.